Extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Hello, guys, and welcome back to Sunday Vibes Extra Time. It's your boys, Chris, Doogie, and Pat today, putting together a team that is capable of breaking the hegemony of the top six exclusively with players outside of the top six. And before you listen to the rest of this podcast, can you please head over to the FBA website and vote for us in the best podcast section?
Yes.
Pretty please. So a few ground rules before we start then, gentlemen. I am the director of football, a role that we've used before on this podcast. So you're my head scouts and you'll be pitching me many a player as we progress through this podcast. We've all agreed to play a 4-2-3-1 formation, so we know what sort of profile of player to go after. And to get the ball rolling in our starting XI, we've incorporated players that we've already covered in depth as to not go over well-trodden ground. So Patricio is our goalkeeper, Ruben Neves, lining up in central midfield, I assume in the pivot, gentlemen, the 4-2-3-1, and Aaron Wan-Bissaka at right back, who we can't stop talking about at the moment. So that gives us a starting point, a jump-off point. Doogie and Pat are my chief scouts, like we've kind of used already, and I'm going to be interrogating them on their decisions and dropping in a few of my own suggestions every now and then. Are we ready for this, gentlemen?
Ready. Yeah. Come on.
Right, so I'm going to kick us off with what we're looking for. Basically, I've looked at the numbers of the top six and tried to pinpoint the metrics that kind of define positions 1-6. So what we need to excel in, where the various chinks in their armor might be. Excuse me. So hopefully this will help you. This will aid you in your quest to put together a starting XI that can finally, you know, do the business. So shots, I've started with shots. Current all top six sides averaging over 12 shots a game, 13 plus when you remove Arsenal, who are averaging 12.6, with at least seven of those coming from inside the box. Now, a minimum of 4.6 of those shots are hitting the target too, plus five if you remove Arsenal yet again. And City lead the league on 6.9, followed closely by United on 6.3. On the defensive end, they all concede fewer than 13 shots, although this is where one of the biggest discrepancies is in terms of collective performance as a top six, because league-wide, the top three are Manchester City, Liverpool and Chelsea, who statistically speaking look to be going through a bit of a rough patch, a bit unlucky at the moment. They all concede sub-10, City a frightening 6.9, Tottenham are sixth in this regard, and then Arsenal and United are 12th and 13th respectively.
Mm-hmm.
So defensively, quite porous, a little bit suspect, much more so than in previous years, and this might give us an opening, gentlemen, if we put together, you know, the right medley of defenders, let's say. I think creating a top six defence is probably... it's probably easier now than it has been, you know, in the previous 5-10 years. Possession-wise, the top six are averaging over 54% possession, or around that. United, the lowest in this regard, on 53.7%. City, the top dogs, on 64%, followed by Liverpool's 58%. Only side outside of the top six that average over 50% is Everton on 50.9%. Pass accuracy also ranging from 82 to 89% in the top six. One of the biggest statistical jumps between 6th and 7th is this metric, and it's not very sexy, but Wolves averaging 77% right now. And for me, not a bad barometer for how I'd rate the top 10 managers in terms of how capable their teams are of completing passes, how well they're executing the current systems that they're deploying. Now, the top six have all completed the most accurate short passes this season, with only Manchester United and Liverpool appearing in the top six for successful long balls from the big boys. So what I've kind of surmised from this is maybe we should emphasise the importance of our short game and pick up players who are adept in this regard. Short passes completed also puts Brighton, Newcastle, Burnley and Cardiff in the relegation places, so correctly calling three of the bottom five. So it kind of bears it out at both ends of the table. Maybe a little bit obvious, but again, maybe just kind of intimating what profile of player we should go after, you know, who can operate at that level of the Premier League. In terms of creativity and individual flair, all the top six are completing over 7.6 dribbles and over 9 key passes per game. And I've seen some of the personnel that you might suggest, and I think some are very capable in that regard. So, couple of quick case studies that I put together. Again, just kind of teeing you boys up to take us through the litany of personnel that you've collected for this task. So, I've gone for Arsenal, Wolves and Leicester. Basically, I've picked Arsenal because Unai Emery's task is essentially a variation of ours right now, isn't it? Just instead of breaking into, you know, the top six, he wants to break back into Champions League football, where even fifth would represent progress at this point. But just going back to those very top line statistics that I just mentioned, Arsenal look the most likely team to supersede in our quest to break the top six. I think in my opinion, you know, few glances there from Pato, which might suggest otherwise. But we'll move on to that in a second, I guess. So with 8 games to go, Arsenal were only 1 win away from last year's points total, but their XG is down in both departments for goals scored and goals conceded. Took this from a StatsBomb article. So was 1.5 and 1.23 respectively last year, now 1.45 and 1.25. So I think they're there for the taking. Now, Wolves and Leicester. Leicester look better equipped in terms of shots per game, shots conceded, possession, shots on target, what I've mentioned before. But are 3 points behind Wolves in terms of expected points. So I think we could maybe use Wolves and Leicester as a bit of a springboard in our search for players. Now, I've got some other stuff, some other metrics that I'll mention when we kind of rifle through your players. But kicking us off, I guess, in defence then, Doogie, do you want to go first?
Sure, yeah. So we're both looking for 2 centre-backs. And yeah, the first one I wanted to put forward was Issa Diop, the 22-year-old West Ham centre-back who is playing his first year of English football. But such have, you know, the quality of performance has been, it's tough to believe that. So he's obviously from Toulouse. He joined the club in 2006, aged 9, began training with the first team in September 2015. He was part of a really talented young crop of players coming through at the same time, which included Alban Lafont, who's the Fiorentina keeper. And the 20-year-old is, you know, thought to be the long-term heir to Lloris in goal. Diop made his debut age 18, scored on his second appearance, made 23 appearances in his first season as La Tefese narrowly avoided relegation on the final day. His performances, though, showed what was to come. 4.1 tackles and interceptions, 5.7 clearances per 90, one more than anyone else in the team, and only one player, Marcel Tisserand, who's now at Wolfsburg, made more than his 2.6 interceptions per 90. In his second full season, he upped that to 31 appearances for the team. They finished 13th and he captained the side for the first time. So he was named full captain at the start of the 17-18 season last year. He missed just 4 games, but Toulouse only narrowly avoided relegation, surviving by a playoff. So his time at Toulouse, he made 85 senior appearances, narrowly avoided 2 relegations, worked under 4 coaches and was named club captain, all before the age of 21. He left having had a statistical season which looked like this. 3.9 tackles and interceptions, 79.6% pass accuracy, which was the 4th best in the team. So he was quite raw, but this guy sort of demanded attention by the way he'd stepped onto the professional scene. And amidst interest from Man United, Arsenal and Spurs, the French centre-back, who's actually of Senegalese descent as well, joined West Ham for a club record £22 million. Which superseded the £20 million that they paid for Arnautovic. He actually didn't start the season well at all. West Ham started the season disastrous, I think, losing their first 4 Premier League games. He didn't start their first 2 games, and then they lost 4-0. That was 4-0 loss to Liverpool and a 2-1 loss at home to Bournemouth. He then started their home game against Arsenal. They lost 3-1. He scored an own goal. And next up was Wimbledon in the League Cup, and Pellegrini badly needed to stop the slump. They conceded after 2 minutes, but Diop's first goal for the club led to a 3-1 turnaround, and West Ham only lost 1 of their next 4 league games, so their season was up and running. Since then, Issa Diop hasn't missed a single game, and he's had some standout performances too. I mean, in their 3-1 victory over Man United at home, he made 4 tackles and interceptions, won 2 aerial duels, completed a dribble and had a 96% pass accuracy. Such was the strength of his performance that Mourinho called him a monster for dominating Paul Pogba and said that, you know, maybe Man United should have tried harder to sign him last summer. His transfer value has risen over £20 million, according to the CEIS, since August. And he looks like strong in the air, good on the ball. His pass accuracy is still not what you'd want from a top six centre-back at the moment. I think it's in the low 80s. But, you know, he's stepped up to every challenge that's come at him. He's formed a nice central defensive partnership with Balbuena. And if the French didn't have such ridiculous, depth at centre-back, you'd probably, you know, have him nailed down as a future international. But, you know, he's competing against the likes of Varane, Umtiti, Laporte, Kimpembe, Longley, Diallo, Upamecano, Zuma, Hernandez, Pavard, Malangsar and Zagadou, who are all 25 and under. So the depth of that French squad for years to come is going to be absolutely ridiculous. But I think Issa Diop, really impressive first year. I think he's looked like one of the standout centre-backs in the division, let alone outside the top six. And yeah, I've been really impressed by every move, and I think you should consider him for our side.
I think we put Diop in a 10 of players best you should buy signings from around Europe. No, back in like 2016.
Oh, really?
Like as a potential young centre-back you should sign. And at that point, he was what, like 20? Yep. How old is he now, sorry?
He's 22.
Yeah, okay, so he was like 2019 back then. And he looked like a really good prospect. At the same time, like I keep being told by people how a lot of people seem to love Chilwell, a lot of people love Diop, Balbuena I think is pretty decent, and also everyone seems to love Declan Rice, and yet West Ham's defence is still terrible. And that's one of the things, you know, I think if all these players are as good as people think they are, why is their defence still awful? So I don't know, I'm not necessarily blaming that on Diop. But they are the third worst team in the league by expected goals against.
Really?
Which is not tip top. Now I'm not saying that doesn't mean he can make the step up to the next level. But I think, particularly with Declan Rice, I think a lot of people are not making the distinction between a young player with lots of potential and a young player who's actually really good now, which I don't think Declan Rice is. I think he will be good, but I don't think he's good at the moment.
I do think sometimes their midfield leaves them slightly overexposed. I think Declan Rice and Noble, and it's often Snodgrass playing their there in midfield. That's still not an ideal combination.
Mm.
And with injuries up front, they haven't looked that consistent going forward as well, which has invited a lot of pressure on that defence. And, you know, they've still got, who do they play at left back? Cresswell, and then on the right it's often Zabaleta. I don't think that's ideal on the right hand side anyway.
Well, they've got Masuaku as well on the left, and I love Masuaku, but he cannot play in a back four.
Yeah,
like at the same time with Pellegrini, you assume that Pellegrini's capable of fixing it. I mean, one of my first centre back is Fabian Scher, who's obviously at Newcastle this season under Benitez, and he's got really good tackle and interception numbers for a defender. He's got 5.4 per
some
game.
Lovely recent goals as
but
well.
You know what that tells me? That tells me that the midfield is not protecting him as much as it should. Like, which is a weird thing actually for a Rafa Benitez side. You know, that for a defender to have to make so many plays, it means that you're kind of living on a knife edge, and it's not really what you want to see. He's also not especially amazing in the air. I think he wins about half of his aerial duels, which is not spectacular, but I think he's really the passer in that defence, I guess. Like 6 long balls a game completed, which is more than Xhaka, more than Van Dijk. I mean, his accuracy is not as good as Xhaka's or Van Dijk's, but at the same time, it's pretty decent distribution for a guy they got for 3 mil after Deportivo got relegated.
He's just hitting Salomon Rondon as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, though at the same time, when you have Salomon Rondon, you expect somebody to have good accuracy. Like, that is an advantage that you have. So I think he's actually 6th among outfielders in the Prem for completed long balls per game, which I like. But I don't know. The problem with Fabian Scher, I think, a little bit, is that he was linked to big clubs back in, like, 2013.
Was that when he was at Basel?
Yeah. You know, when he was meant to go to Arsenal, he was meant to go to Spurs, he was meant to go to United, and then in the end, he went off to Hoffenheim, where he didn't really have the legs to cover large areas. And then he went to Depor, and they got relegated. But I do think that he's a good, classy player. I think he's a pretty solid centre-back. My only issue
expansive dribbler as well.
Well, that's my one issue, though. When you play for a bigger side, you're expected to cover more ground because your midfielders are pushing forward, your fullbacks are pushing forward. So inevitably, centre-backs have more area to cover. And it might just be that he's not great at that, which I think is true of Burnley centre-backs as well. Like, I've got a Burnley centre-back in my other spot, but you always do have that concern about what happens when they're not in this strict 4-4-2. It's the same reason I wouldn't buy a centre-back from, like, Atletico Madrid. Because I think that as good as they are, like, I mean, Luca Hernandez is a special case. He's played at left back, but
you'd take Jimenez, surely. An Arsenal fan, you'd love Jimenez.
I'd take him, but he's not who I'd target if I could target any centre back. Like, because you just do not know how they're going to transfer from that system to a much more open one. Like, that's a really difficult transition to make.
Fair.
So, just to make things clear, they're your first two defensive candidates.
Yes.
We have 3 roles to fill from left back to the 2 centre-backs, with Aaron Wan-Bissaka already occupying the right back position. I think he's the outstanding candidate, we all agree. So there's no need to talk about him. So are you proposing that these pair play as a partnership, gentlemen? Or have you got other names to throw in the mix up for centre back?
That was my suggestion for one of the slots. I've got another one.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Just going back to
West Ham's numbers, were they not slightly skewed by the kind of defeats they enjoyed at the start of the season, because they were rolled over in the kind of first five or six games, weren't they? Or are their per 90 numbers still alarmingly bad?
Well, they're still not good, but I mean, their per 90 numbers will still take that into account from the start of the season. Like, I mean, you can make the same point about Arsenal or Man United. So for instance, when you say Man United have the lowest possession of any of the top six sides, that's obviously taken into account the Mourinho time, where Mourinho doesn't give a fuck about possession. And similarly, Arsenal, a lot of their defensive kind of travails were, I guess, in the first couple of months of the season. So, I mean, yeah, you're always to a certain extent like at the mercy of results earlier in the year. But I think overall, West Ham are going through probably one of their worst periods of the season right now. They had a really strong kind of middle section, I'd say. So at the moment, they look like maybe the legs have given up a little bit, or maybe they just don't quite have the edge right now. But
I seem to remember them at the start of the season playing a high line, not well at all, and being rolled over.
And playing Jack Wilshere in midfield, which is never a great idea.
Yeah, and it took them a while to figure out, to play a midfield three, didn't have two bodies in and around Noble instead of just Jack Wilshere. So
yeah.
They've also been quite unfortunate with lots of their injuries in attack. Obviously, Arnautovic has been out for quite a long time. Yarmolenko went out as well, which, you know, maybe he wasn't going to bang quite in. What I remember him having an amazing game against Everton, and everyone was like, oh, he looks great, but I probably wasn't going to be a 15 goal, you know, forward, but he definitely would have helped. But yeah, my other centre back is a bit of a feel good story, I think, actually. It's Nathan Ake, because he has gone the long way round to get where he is today. So he's obviously 24 now, but he joined Chelsea in the youth system in 2011 from Feyenoord, age 16. He made 17 appearances for the club over the next 5 years, and just 7 in the Premier League. He was actually in and around the first team from sort of a really early stage. So he was on the bench for the Europa League final in 2013. He was named Chelsea Young Player of the Year the same season. But he's since claimed that failing to break into the first team the following year under Mourinho left him mentally broken. He then went on loan to Reading for the rest of the season in March 2015, made 5 appearances. Following year, he really kicked on. This is when he joined newly promoted Watford after signing a 5-year deal at Chelsea. So he's primarily deployed as a left back, made 24 appearances under Kike Sanchez Flores, and played exceptionally well. He averaged 7.4 tackles and interceptions per 90, which is a crazy amount. I think that's higher than Idrissa Gueye this year for Everton, who I think is winning that, leading that metric in the Premier League.
I think he is.
And he was named as Watford's Young Player of the Year. They finished 13th, reached an FA Cup semi-final. They lost 2-1 to Palace, and then Palace went on to the final, and Jesse Lingard scored that volley, I think. For the 16-17 season, he was again sent out on loan, this time to Bournemouth. Made 10 Premier League appearances for them, scoring 3 times before he was recalled by Chelsea by Antonio Conte in January 2017. This looked like the sort of time that he'd go back to Chelsea and really establish himself as the player he was meant to be there. He only made 5 appearances for them for the rest of the season, having been recalled. So again, his development was being stymied. He did start an FA Cup semi-final victory against Spurs, but it just wasn't really happening for him. Chelsea decided, let's cut our losses.
Was Christensen getting in ahead of him?
Christensen, I think it was pre that. I think it was Cahill and Azpilicueta and David Luiz, I think. That summer, he then joined Bournemouth for a club record £20 million, which has since been topped by Jefferson Lerma. He played every single game last year and 41 games in all competitions. 2 goals, 3 assists in the Premier League, which is useful. 83.9% pass accuracy, 2.7 tackles and interceptions. Only Begovic played more minutes than him in the league. This year, it's been the same. He hasn't missed a single game, played 2,732 minutes, 200 more than the next best in the squad, which is Ryan Fraser. Again, he's chipped in with 3 goals, and he's upped his pass accuracy to 85.8%, which is only topped by Sermon's 87% in the entire squad. So that's the sort of numbers that you'd expect from a top 6 centre-back, and yet he's doing it at Bournemouth, who do see a lot of the ball, but you know, still, that's very impressive. They've actually conceded. I mean, everyone always, when it comes to discussing Bournemouth, say they're too open, particularly away from home. And yes, they do have an awful away record, but they've actually conceded 6 more than expected goals suggest they should have, which would lead to 2.8 more points, and they'd be up 2 positions into 10th. So they aren't quite as bad as that defence suggests. He's still just 24. He's had 10 caps for the Netherlands now. He's got a big future ahead of him. If I was someone like Spurs, who are losing potentially Alderweireld this summer, I think you could do a lot worse than Nathan Aké. I think he's genuinely of that quality. I don't think he's a title winning centre-back, but Spurs on a cut-down transfer budget potentially this summer, Nathan Aké, I think, would be a great signing.
I actually am a huge fan of Nathan Aké. I mean, you say Bournemouth see a lot of the ball. I think they've seen less of it this season. I think they are turning into slightly more of a counter-attacking side. Mm. So, I mean, and as a result, kind of exerting less control over games, I guess. And I think the defence are under a little bit more pressure, highlighted by kind of Jefferson Lerma's, you know, vital contribution this season. I like Nathan Aké big time as a suggestion, probably more so than Diop at this point. Ooh. However, we're going to go, how do we get 4-2, Patrick Van Straat? And give us your last centre-back suggestion.
I'm kind of happy for it to be Aké, but at the same time, I think it's entirely possible Aké is not that good. Like, that's the problem.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I feel like there's relative... It's extremely difficult to judge.
Quite a big sample size now.
Yeah, but the problem is, like, stats for centre-backs are extremely difficult. Like, it's very, very difficult to really judge a centre-back using stats. Like, this is notoriously the case. And especially when they've maybe moved between 4 at the back, 3 at the back. They've played full-back as well. Obviously, in the case of Aké, which makes his defensive numbers tick up. I mean, I like him, and to be honest, I'd be happy to bet on him, like, over a lot of defenders, because also physically he's so impressive as well. He's extremely fast, and I like that he's left-footed, and I think that that speed overall often makes, like, I'd be more willing to bet on him one-on-one versus top attackers than I would a lot of defenders in the league.
Yeah, I think when you match that speed with his anticipation as well, when they beat, was it Chelsea earlier on the season? Like, the amount of times he would cut the ball out at the near post was pretty staggering. Like, I think he has got the match intelligence to play on a higher level. So who's your final contender?
I'm not really bothered. Like, I'm happy to go for Aké. Like, I put in Tarkowski, but to be honest, I was kind of underwhelmed by the options here. I really don't think that there are that many great centre-backs in the league. In fact, I don't even think there are that many great centre-backs in the top six, to be honest. Like, once you get past some of the nailed-on starters, you get some really weak defenders.
Yeah, outside of City and Liverpool, there's not much, is there?
Yeah, I mean, I'd still take
Vertonghen, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd definitely take Vertonghen. I'd definitely take Alderweireld. Sanchez is obviously still very, very talented. Like, Koscielny's having a great time at the moment. But he's extremely young. I mean, like, you expect that with centre-backs. Like, it's weird. I'd say it's weirder that he was contributing at the level he was last season than that he's dropped off to the extent he has this season. So, yeah, I'm happy to go for Aké in one spot. Like, I'm happy to go with that one. Though I wouldn't go for Diop and Aké, because Diop's left-footed as well, is he not?
Okay. I mean, if we're talking fine margins, we just looked at the West Ham fan in the room there. If we're talking fine margins, then we only need to concede less shots than Manchester United and Arsenal then in our first step to build a side capable of the top six, which was 12. Now, I think Aké should definitely go down as one, so our left centre-back. Do you think that Harry Maguire, not worthy of a shout in this equation?
Worthy of shout, sure. Like, not like a nailed-on starter, but like, if we went for Harry Maguire, like, that would make perfect sense to me. On the other hand, I think we should limit how many players we can get from, say, Leicester or Wolves, because
yes,
I think that,
that
if we
true.
End up having like 4 players from Leicester, 4 players from Wolves,
we're trying to be a bit exciting.
We are probably going to make the top six.
Kind of bearing that in mind when you didn't pick Harry Maguire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I talk about
there's
Maguire
more exceptional candidates from those sides.
And actually,
we've
gone for really defensive fullbacks here. Like, Ben Chilwell and Aaron Wan-Bissaka are both extremely defensive fullbacks.
Wow.
Like, they can get forward a bit, but neither one is like particularly great in attack, whereas they are both exceptionally good in defence, I'd say. So, like, those guys plus Aké plus somebody else, that is a real fucking unit of, like,
in front of
strong,
Rudy,
fast,
I'm
intelligent,
confident of our defense.
Reasonably young defenders as well. Mm. That's a young backline. Wan-Bissaka, Aké, Chilwell plus one.
Yeah, I mean, we hadn't actually mentioned Chilwell before, but this was kind of one name that I insisted on putting in the side, I guess. I mean, insist is a bit strong. I think we're all in agreement that Ben Chilwell, 22 years old, I mean, contracted until 2024 at Leicester and valued at, well, a very modest 25 million now by transfer mark. But he's been heavily linked with Manchester City and Liverpool of late. I'm not sure, you know, if he'd be willing to go to Liverpool and compete with the place with Andy Robertson if Moreno was to leave. I think he's far better than just being a rotation option. 5 England caps in 2018, so kind of already, you know, establishing himself at international level. More league appearances this year than last year. He's featured in 29 of Leicester's 31 games. He's 2.6 tackles and interceptions, quite modest, I guess, but maybe a nod to the fact that he's, you know, contributes better on the attacking end, or Leicester utilise him more as an attacking left back. So 1.4 dribbles, that's almost twice as good as Andy Robertson's 0.8 per 90.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, 1.2 key passes per game, so that's marginally better than Luke Shaw. And 3.4 clearances. I think that's maybe a good indication of him using that pace, getting back and kind of making that last ditch clearance. So that's better than Wolves' Matt Doherty in that regard. So are we happy to go Chilwell, Ake, Tarkowski if Diop is left footed? Can't have two left footed centre backs in the team. I agree. And then Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
I mean, they're pretty lethal. I think Bernardo deserves a shout at left back as well. Like, limited numbers this season at Brighton, only about 1,100 minutes, but absolutely outrageous tackling. Mm. Again, he's kind of like a shut-down defensive fullback, like 5.5 tackles and interceptions per game. I'd say that's, again, probably because he doesn't play behind Ndidi, but I think in the long run, he's probably going to have better attacking numbers than Chilwell.
Yeah.
Who's, I don't know, I don't want to say he's nothing special there, but he doesn't look like he's anything special there yet.
Oof.
Like, I think...
poor guy.
Well, no, he's a very good, he's a good fullback. I think any top team would love him, but I think you hope that those attacking numbers will go up on a team that has more possession.
Yeah. Strongly linked, like, with Man City.
Dribbling's good, but key passes are generally a little bit low.
Yeah.
I would...
We could also give a shout out to Ricardo Pereira, sorry, right back. We just want to say that.
Yeah, I mean, Ricardo Pereira, I take it we've just dismissed Ricardo Pereira.
From the Leicester factor, I think, yeah.
Well, because of the Leicester factor and because of Aaron Wan-Bissaka at right back being the outstanding candidate. I mean, he's played left wing this season. He's played right wing, Ricardo Pereira.
So great wherever.
So we could kind of draft him into the squad and have him as an option. But in terms of claiming a starting berth, his options are pretty limited in our 4-2-3-1, aren't they? But he definitely deserves a shout out. Transporting those numbers from Porto to Leicester, to the Premier League, kind of with ease in his versatility. His numbers have probably suffered a little bit as a result of his versatility, I guess, this season, but he's been exceptional for Leicester. So should we move on to the pivot? Who is going to partner Neves, gentlemen? And as Doogie kicked off our defenders, Pato, have you thought of an ideal partner outside the top six to go with the cultured Ruben Neves?
Yeah, I like Ruben Neves a lot. Again, I think he's a little bit lucky to walk into our 11. I'm not sure that he's like that overwhelmingly better than all the other central midfielders outside the top six. And I think Wolves as well, he's got very good defensive numbers this season. But also Wolves don't commit their midfielders forward. They sit back extremely deep. They don't really burst forward at all. And so I think we need somebody who is a bit more of a ground coverer next to him. I have an inkling of who Doogie's going to go for, but I've gone for somebody a little bit more aggressive, I think. So I've gone for Yves Bissouma.
Okay.
Obviously, I'm a big fan of this guy. I thought about Idrissa Gueye as well. Mm. I thought about Pierre-Emile Højbjerg.
He's a bit old for me, Idrissa Gueye, for this side.
Well, also with Gueye, I don't think he adds much beyond his defensive abilities. Mm. And his defensive abilities are incredible, but then it's only Neves getting the ball forward. And I think we run the risk of being like Chelsea running everything through Jorginho. So Højbjerg, Gueye, interesting options, but I went for Yves Bissouma, who is really, really rare in terms of having a combination of big defensive output and ball progression. Huge ball progression numbers last season at Lille. This year, he's 11th in the Prem for successful dribbles per game. Everybody above him is a winger. Every single player above him for dribbles this season in the Prem is a winger. And his defensive actions are among the best in the league. 5 tackles and interceptions per game, partially because he plays on a weak side, but very solid nonetheless.
Surprisingly weak, aren't they, Brighton? I think they're in real danger of going down.
I think that Houghton's fucked this a little bit. I like Chris Houghton a lot, but I think there is this disconnection between manager and recruitment at that club. Like,
why are they not using Jahanbash as well?
Well, exactly. I think they need possibly a more creative coach, or one who's not just going to rely on anyone. No issue playing Glenn Murray. Glenn Murray's had a great season and has shown how good he still is at finding space in the box. But Bissouma, 1,200 minutes. Bernardo, 1,100 minutes. Jahanbash and Florin Andone, 600 minutes each.
Wow.
That, to me, says bad talent evaluation. And also with Bissouma, you can see some of his numbers being knocked down. He was playing for a much better side than Brighton last year in Lille. I mean, they weren't amazing. They could have got relegated, but I think they had much more talent on them than Brighton do, and a much more interesting style. And he was completing nearly 60 passes a game, completing 3 long balls, completing over 3 dribbles a match. Now he's at 2 dribbles. He's at 36 passes, down from 60. He's at 2 long balls, down from 3. So overall, I think that's a bit of a depressing drop-off. And I think at the time, I said that I would have liked him to go to Spurs as a Moussa Dembélé replacement, and I think we would have really seen something there. He's very fast. He's 22. And this season, actually, his expected goals and expected assists per 90, it's about 0.18, which is like not spectacular, but it's better than Xhaka, who takes corners. It's better than Jorginho Wijnaldum, who everybody seems to think is some amazing like genius at bursting into the box, like Frank Lampard. So, yeah, I think that Bissouma is probably one of the most talented and one of the most unusually talented midfielders in the Premier League at the moment. And I think he gives you a little bit more impetus than an out-and-out defensive player like Gay.
Okay, I mean, I do think, yeah, pretty fair kind of summation of Idrissa Gueye's impact in this team. Let's dismiss him. That's a very compelling case for Bissouma. So you've got to follow that up.
Yeah.
Who are you going for?
I hear Pato's 22-year-old Bissouma, and I raise him with my 22-year-old Wilfred Ndidi.
That's not a raise.
I think it certainly
is. That's at best a check.
No. Wait until you hear this. So he, in my opinion, is one of the most underrated players in the Premier League. He obviously emerged at Genk between January 2015 and January 2017. 83 appearances, persuading Leicester to part with £17 million to bring him to the reigning English champions. It was easy to see why. We don't obviously have his Belgian Pro League stats, but they played in the Europa League in the first half of that. He played in the Europa League in the first half of that year, sorry. His side eventually reached the quarterfinals before losing to Celta Vigo, who then lost to United. So they were quite a good side, Genk, back then. Indeed, he played in 6 Europa League games. He scored twice. He averaged 11.8 tackles and interceptions per 90, with 7 tackles a game, as well as 1.8 shots. I know this is in the Europa League, but that was incredible performance from a 20-year-old.
Small sample of that.
His, true, six games, but still. His arrival in the Midlands was much needed. They'd obviously sold Kante to Chelsea the previous summer, and they brought in Mendy from Nice for a club record £13 million, which would then be broken by Moussa for £16 million and Slimani for £29 million, all in that summer, which just shows how badly Leicester bought, having been champions. I mean, Moussa and Slimani, awful signings. However, Mendy injured his ankle on his competitive debut against Arsenal, kept him out of action until December. He then recovered, played 7 games, and then injured his ankle again, was out for the rest of the season. By the time he got back to full fitness, Shakespeare had replaced Ranieri and sent Mendy back to Nice on loan for the duration of last year. Mendy, I'll get onto Ndidi in a second, but he's come back, obviously, this year, established himself under Claude Puel initially, his former Nice boss, and has played 27 games, although since Rodgers has taken over, he's been on the bench with Rodgers favouring Ndidi and Tielemans. Anyway, back to Ndidi. So when he arrived at Leicester, Leicester were in complete crisis. They were 14th, having won 5 of their opening 20 league games under Ranieri, drawing 6 and losing 9. He made his debut against Chelsea on the 14th of January. They lost 3-0, sorry, and they lost their next 4 games to leave them 17th in mid-February and slipping towards relegation. Ranieri was then sacked and Shakespeare took over. Their first game was Liverpool at home, and they were chasing Champions League football. They won 3-1, and Ndidi made 11 tackles in that game, the second most in a single league game that season after N'Golo Kante, who also put in 14 against Liverpool. They then won the next 4. Shakespeare became the first manager to score 3 or more goals in his first 3 matches and the first Englishman to win his first 4 league games. They eventually stabilised and finished 12th, whilst also reaching a UEFA Champions League quarter-final. And since the start of that season, since the start of his arrival that season in winter, Ndidi has missed just 5 Premier League games. This year, he's averaging 5.6 tackles and interceptions per 90, 1.7 shots, 0.9 dribbles, and 0.6 key passes from his deep line position, which isn't as good as Bissouma's. I'll give Pato that. But I do think he's the better all-round player, I have to say. And only Idrissa Gueye, Dendonka and Wan-Bissaka, of players to have played at least 500 minutes, are averaging more than his 3.6 tackles per 90.
Why is he the better all-round player? Like, I think basically what you're getting... I love Ndidi, but he's just a defensive midfielder. He's a really good defensive midfielder.
I think he's better for this side. Definitely.
I think next to Neves,
yeah.
But Neves can't move the ball forward at his feet. Like, and I think
that's harsh. I think Neves he got can't. Quite a good long-range pass.
No, he can't move the ball forward at his feet. He can't dribble through the midfield.
I see what you mean.
He can't evade pressure. So I think I really like Ndidi, and I think he'd be a great fit for the right side. But I think that more and more now you need midfielders who can actually dribble a bit and who are more expansive with their passing. And Ndidi's a fine passer, but he's not special. He's not a good dribbler, and his shooting is fun, but like
I'd be gutted.
Fun because it's like 30 yards out, I mean, and I want Ndidi to score.
I'd be gutted if you went for Bissouma over Ndidi.
I think he is. The thing is, he's got, basically, I feel like if you trade Bissouma for Ndidi, you're getting about half a tackle and interception more per game, and you're losing ball progression. And ball progression, I think, is actually what turns middling clubs into good clubs.
Yeah, I
think
maybe it's just because I haven't been that impressed with Brighton this year.
Brighton are shit.
I've sort of judged Bissouma. I don't think he's made enough of a difference to that side.
I think it's quite hard to make a difference on your own when you're only playing like half the available minutes. I mean,
they've got some good players as well. I don't know.
Yeah, but none of them play. I think, like, I agree. But
I've largely ignored Bissouma because I, like you, haven't really been a fan of Brighton, and as a result of their, you know, dour performances of late, haven't really kept up with them. I do think the argument is more compelling to have Bissouma matched up with Neves. But I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't pick Ndidi over Bissouma, given my current understanding of both their skill sets. So whilst I mean, Ndidi was brilliant at the World Cup as well when he played, and obviously I've had far more visibility of him, you know, having watched Leicester much more frequently than Brighton, I would sympathise with your sentiments that he's the better all-round player.
But that
might be because of my ignorance towards Bissouma. So the way you've put the argument forward, I do think he's more simpatico with Neves. We need someone who is going to get us up the pitch, because Neves is a deep line, you know, playmaker, isn't he? He's a controller. He's a long ball specialist, despite I think he was averaging more shots than Pogba in the first half of the season.
He's playing quite attacking. Yeah.
Yeah, and he takes free kicks as well, doesn't he? Which definitely would skew results. But what do we think to Tielemans in this position?
Yeah, you know, when you mentioned him before, Doogie, I literally forgot he existed. Like, he's
been great.
He's really good. And somebody put up a list the other day of players under 25 around Europe who are making more than 3 tackles and interceptions a game and completing more than 3 progressive passes and runs. So basically people with really good ball progression and good defensive numbers. And the list was like Rabiot, Lo Celso, Guendouzi, Tielemans, and somebody else.
So he's keeping pretty elite company.
That's a hell of a list, actually. Like, to be up there. Like, I mean, he's not up there with Rabiot or Lo Celso. Those guys are ridiculous. But it's quite an elite group to be in.
I mean,
on a shit team as well at Monaco.
I think he's going to benefit greatly from Brendan Rodgers as well. Like, that is the profile of player that I do think Rodgers kind of specialises in improving. I mean, Stuart Armstrong, you know, to give you a small example of his time at Celtic, he turned him from a kind of peripheral figure into this £8 million export to Southampton, who is now kind of key under Ralf Hasenhüttl's kind of, new, more frenetic, you know, box-to-box midfield mantra. I think we should go for Tielemans or Bissouma in this regard. And as you brought Bissouma to the table, Pato, I'll give you the last word on this. So you have the option to swap out Tielemans for Bissouma. Otherwise, we'll go with you, man.
I think I'd take Bissouma at the moment, but that's because I haven't looked at Tielemans' defensive numbers. On the other hand, I mean, like, look, Ndidi... you might be right that Ndidi's a better player than Bissouma at the moment, but he's certainly not a better all-round player.
I mischose my word.
He's obviously got a more limited skill set, but I think I'd be happy to admit that he's the better player at the moment. That doesn't mean I'd necessarily pick him, if that makes sense.
I mean, I can't get beyond, you know, just his defensive qualities. So
they are very good.
In that too, there would be, I mean, you'd have a lot of presence in front of the back four, wouldn't you?
Yeah, 100%.
But depending on what sort of number 10 we pick, this would be a side that relied heavily on width if you only had a defensive midfielder in the centre. So we needed someone with that energy, the ability to get up and down. I still think, yeah, indeed, he's a better player, but Bissouma's a better fit.
Okay.
So let's go Bissouma. So, you know, good management. Making the hard decisions. So we move on. Let's start with the number 10, the sexiest position in the three-man midfield, the forward unit. And Doogie, you can kick us off, mate, having, you know, just been pipped to the post for Ndidi.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll be pipped again on this one, to be honest, because I think me and Pato, we were talking about it in the office before we did this, and we're both really in agreement for who you should go for. But I will put forward the other candidate. A case has to be made purely on sort of this season that Gylfi Sigurdsson has to be considered one of the better options in a number 10 role outside of the top six. Not necessarily the best, but he's incredibly effective. So what people don't know, I thought when I'm delving into Sigurdsson a little bit, you know, he's got actually had a pretty crazy career. He's played in all four tiers of English football. He joined Reading from Iceland on a scholarship aged 16 in 2005, made his debut in August 2008 in a Carling Cup game against Luton. That's Chris's mic's just taking a little sleep. Hopefully it's okay.
He stands are cheap.
Yeah. And he then sent on loan to League Two club Shrewsbury to gain experience. He made six appearances and scored a goal in his month in the West of England. He then returned to Reading before he joined League One side Crewe on an emergency loan until the end of the season. He made 15 appearances for the Railway Men, scoring three goals, but couldn't prevent their relegation to League Two. But 2009-10 was when it really kicked off for Sigurdsson, playing first under Brendan Rodgers and then Brian McDermott. He 64 caps, Icelandic international, exploded. He scored 20 goals in 44 matches in the Championship. They had a great FA Cup run that season. He edged out Ryan Bertrand as Reading's Player of the Year that year. I'd completely forgotten that Ryan Bertrand played at Reading. It must have been on loan from Chelsea. Despite a lot of interest from Premier League club, Sigurdsson then elected to join Hoffenheim. He only started 13 games all season, 10 in the Bundesliga, but finished with 10 goals in 13 starts and two assists under Ralf Rangnick. Then joined Swansea, 7 goals, 3 assists in 18 games, which prompted AVB to make him his first signing at Spurs. It was a bit of a weird time for Spurs. So the basis of Redknapp's team, you know, the Modrics, the Van der Vaarts, the Nico Kranjčars, the Korlukas, were all sold that summer. And AVB actually did some great signings. So he brought in Hugo Lloris, he brought in Dembele, Vertonghen, Clint Dempsey, less said about him the better, Adebayor likewise, and Lewis Holtby.
What? El Deuce?
But I do like Clint Dempsey, but he's not going to go down as a Spurs legend, more of a Fulham one. But yeah, some interesting signings from AVB, but he never really caught a light at Spurs. 83 games, 13 goals, 5 assists across 2 seasons. Pochettino then took over in July 2014 and sold Sigurdsson to Swansea, with Ben Davies going the other way. He scored 27 goals and provided 26 assists in 106 games for the Swans over the next 3 years. And that sort of appeared to be his level. He seemed to find his niche at Swansea. He was well liked there by the fans. He was useful to every manager that took over, and they went through quite a few at the, you know, in that brief period of time. So that seemed to be the end of, you know, Sigurdsson's progression in England. But then Ronald Koeman, in that crazy summer at Everton, decided to sign a third number 10. For £44 million. And we were all like, that is a crazy amount of money. I mean, Sigurdsson's a good player, but I don't think he fits Everton. And when you're already bringing in Davy Klassen and Wayne Rooney, it simply didn't make sense. So last year, he played 27 games, scored 4 and assisted 3 in a bit of a mess of a side, to be honest. Koeman was sacked in October. Allardyce then took over, played a very sort of mundane, you know, boring style of football. Just really, you know, not agricultural almost in a way. It was a bore fest, really, and the Everton fans hated it. They finished 8th, but Allardyce was shown the door. But this year, playing primarily as a number 10, not on the left, which he did a lot last year, he's been pretty good. 12 goals, joint top goal scorer with Richarlison, and 3 assists to boot as well. His numbers look like this: 2.5 shots, 1.2 dribbles, 1.9 key passes per 90. He's slightly exceeding his XG, but his combined XG and expected assists are still 0.5 per 90, which is bang on his actual goals and assists. So he's doing exactly what his numbers suggest he would. I mean, he probably wouldn't be my pick for number 10, but, you know, he's a good alternative. And I think he's worth considering for this team, but I wouldn't probably pick him.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, great background, but not a very compelling summary. I probably wouldn't pick him.
Yeah.
My biggest gripe with Everton in general, and I think it's affected Sigurdsson's output this season, is that, and I've mentioned this on podcasts gone by, is that they just kind of seem to bypass the midfield. They try and work it down the channels, particularly with Luka Dinja on the left, kind of over-reliant on him as a creator this season. And as a result, Sigurdsson is like bang average for passes completed in the middle third, but first for forward passes completed in the final third. And that's just because he's picking the ball up so late. Although his output, you know, his output has picked up in recent weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah.
He
does also take penalties.
Four penalties this season, 2 missed as well. So that is definitely adding to his gone, his output gone.
Yeah, I think he's somebody, you know, someone to directly compare him to as a polar opposite. Dele Alli can do everything in a number 10 role. He goes all over the place. He dribbles. He, you know, picks up interesting pockets of space. He can deliver a nice ball. Sigurdsson is incredibly useful in the last 30 yards, but you don't get a lot of in terms of build-up play. He's not going to drop into midfield and link it. He's very good at what he does, but and he's carved out a great career for it, but he's probably not the most all-round talented.
Yeah, he's a slightly... I think he'd had a really good career in the 90s. Mm. Like, he's not dissimilar to a Letizia or a Janino Pernambucano. Like, I think... Like, in his skill set. But he's very set-piece based. Actually, a guy you could compare him to a little bit more now is a James Ward-Prowse. Like,
although Ward-Prowse plays slightly deeper.
Yeah, but my point is that Ward-Prowse is like... He's pretty much set-pieces and not a whole lot more. But set-pieces are so good.
I worry about his mobility in terms of the chemistry for our midfield.
Who's Sigurdsson?
Three, this kind of triumvirate in midfield, yes.
Sigurdsson. Yeah, I mean, I think Pascal Gross probably deserves a little shout-out as well. Pascal Gross still picking up great creative numbers on a terrible side. But we were in agreement, really, about who this should be. And Doogie very chivalrously took the hit because it's clearly James Maddison.
Yes.
Yeah.
James Maddison, I mean, I've got a thing here. How many players in Europe do you think have created more chances per game than Maddison this season?
Oh, I think I might have saw this on Twitter. Yeah, it's just...
I know he's top. I think he's top in the Premier League.
He is top in the Premier League.
I would guess three?
Six.
Six?
It's six.
Three was overambitious.
And it's people like Payet, Depay. Messi. I mean, like, it's not Messi. He's above Messi. He's above Neymar. Bearing in mind, think how dominant PSG are.
I think it's
in Ligue 1.
When you take into consideration, I think he's only 23... I think
22.
That's 22. Sorry, I think it was under 23s that I saw.
Yeah,
and I think he ranked second or third. That might be where you're getting that from. But yeah, that's crazy.
He's like up there with the Lorenzo Pellegrini. I think is about the same age and also has similar numbers. But I mean,
Zaniolo. Maybe.
He's above. No, he's not creating a lot of chances. Zaniolo, like, not relative to some of the others, or maybe he just didn't meet like the minutes cut off. But Messi, Neymar, and Hazard, he's above all of those. 22 years old, 6 goals, 6 assists. Which in his first season coming up to the Premier League is great, and he looks like he has that blend of technical ability and also the ability to separate himself from a defender with a little turn of pace. Great technique, obviously, as well. There are flaws in his game, and I'm not sure they'd be ironed out under Rodgers. He's
like what? Give us an example.
His shot selection is horrific. His shot selection is dreadful, and I really hope that Rodgers does work on that, because in the past he hasn't necessarily been great at doing that. Like he at Liverpool, for instance, he let people shoot from range pretty much willy-nilly.
I'd say he did that with Moussa Dembélé and Odson Edouard. See, Moussa Dembélé is the first player to score 16 goals across all competitions. First French player for Lyon since Steve Marley 2001-2.
Yeah, you showed me that in Bali.
So, like, the exports that have come from his kind of first...
Hang on, sorry, what was the stat?
He's the first French player
to
score 16 goals, at least 16 goals in all competitions. Since Steve Marley in 2001.
What about Lacazette and Fekir?
It might have been under 23.
Okay.
But yeah, I've been generally at Celtic. I can't speak, you know, of his time beforehand, but impressed with how he's developed youth. But
it's not about him developing youth. I think he'll develop him fine, though. I think Maddison is at the age where he's going to develop on his own. Mm. It's more whether he's going to coach these long range shots out of his game. Because basically, I think Leicester need to ditch Demarai Gray. Because I don't think he actually adds very much, and he loves to shoot from range. Because I would much rather have Maddison doing that if I had to. But I think 1.8 of his 2.6 shots per game come from outside the box, which is not good.
I'm just reminding you of Coutinho at Liverpool. Is this why?
But he's not as good a long range shooter as Coutinho. I mean, Coutinho has taken twice as many shots as that. To be fair to him, on the other hand, he's probably twice as good at it, and also. I don't know. In a way, it was more annoying at Liverpool because Liverpool had options in the final third. And so I always felt like it was not necessarily great decision making, whereas normally the number 10 is the guy on the pitch who you trust to make good decisions again and again. But Maddison looks like a really mature player. I mean, I think he's got 1.5 dribbles a match as well. So he can clearly, you know, like physically, the step up to the Premier League has not been an issue for him, which is pretty unusual. Maybe means we need to kind of recalibrate our view of how good the Championship is. And his dribbles, I think he's got 73% success rate, so he's not even losing it a lot. 2 tackles and interceptions a match as well, and better expected goals and expected assists per 90 than Christian Eriksen. Actually slightly below Sigurdsson, he's on 0.49.
Okay.
But, you know, it's within the range, isn't it? And Jesus Christ, he's 22. Sigurdsson's what, 28, 29 now?
29.
So you kind of... I mean, Maddison is clearly going to be a superstar, And he already looks like one of the best creative midfielders in the league. So, I mean,
really exciting for England as well, having Dele Alli and James Maddison in the same position.
Yeah.
You can say that for a lot of positions.
Plus the creativity in the wide areas. Yeah. You know, you've got Sterling, you've got Sancho, Hudson-Odoi, Rashford, Nelson coming through as well. You've got so many young players.
I think
actually, one of my guys is in England, is an England wide man as well.
Nice. I think we could have probably put James Maddison in the starting XI from the get-go, but probably didn't want to do that with four of 11 players. So Doogie taking one for the team there, putting forward a pretty decent argument for Gylfi Sigurdsson's inclusion.
And he is going
through a purple patch. But in terms of matching up with Bissouma and Neves, I think James Maddison is the outstanding candidate here. You can kick us off left or right with your choice, Critchley.
I will go with the left wing.
Okay, cool.
And I'm going to go with Ryan Fraser. He's 25 years old, Scottish winger. He's playing in his ninth year of professional football, which is crazy. So he left school age 16 in May 2010, immediately signed for Aberdeen, made his debut 5 months later, age 16. In all, he made 23 appearances for Aberdeen before signing for League One side Bournemouth in January 2013 for just £400,000. He made 5 League One appearances as Bournemouth were promoted to the Championship for the first time since 1989-1990. Back then, it was called the Second Division, obviously. The next year, he sort of established himself. He made 37 appearances, 23 of which were starts, scoring 3 and assisting 1. Still very young, though. The next year, 21 appearances, 1 goal, 1 assist, as Bournemouth were promoted as champions 1 point ahead of Watford. Now, at this point, Eddie Howe didn't believe that 21-year-old Ryan Fraser was quite ready for the Premier League. He sent him on loan to Ipswich. He played 18 games in the second part of the season, because he actually did his cruciate in the first part of the season. 4 goals, 2 assists, but his numbers look great. 2.8 shots, 2.8 key passes, 1 dribble per 90. Eddie Howe now believed he was ready for the Premier League. He'd helped Ipswich to 7th, which for any Tractor Boy fans, you know, that's pretty lofty heights for where you are right now. He then made his Premier League debut the following year against Liverpool in December 2016. So he took up until December for Howe to trust him. He came on as a second half substitute with Liverpool 2-0 up. He then won a penalty, scored the second and assisted the third as Bournemouth came back for a famous 4-3 win. From then on, he's been a regular. 28 appearances that year, 19 starts, scoring 3 and assisting 5. No one provided more goals, and he only played for half the year that year. Last year, 26 appearances, 23 starts, 5 goals, 3 assists. 2018-19, absolutely electric. Been part of a really dynamic attacking unit alongside David Brooks and Callum Wilson and Josh King, who's also looked really good. Josh King in recent weeks, I should say. 6 goals and 10 assists. That's the same amount of goal contributions as Son Heung-min, Firmino, and one more than Rashford, and he's playing for Bournemouth. His numbers aren't actually exceptional. 1.2 shots, 2.4 key passes, and 0.6 dribbles. He's never been a great goal scorer either. Only 0.1 expected goals versus 0.2 actual goals this season. But he's become incredibly effective as a provider. Last year, 0.1 expected assists per 90, now up to 0.4. So Mesut Ozil is considered one of the top creators in the league, but they have identical key passes per 90, 2.4, and his expected assists are 0.3 compared to Fraser's 0.4.
Go on, Fraz.
So in fact, only Sterling, Leroy Sané, and David Silva are averaging more expected assists per 90 than Fraser, who's also level with Kevin De Bruyne. So this is a guy who's performing with some of the top creators in the league. He's been one of the key reasons that Bournemouth have the 7th most successful attack this season. Only the top 6 sides beat their 43 goals, and it's been their defensive shortcomings that mean that they're still not, you know, pushing up there. I think they're 10th or 11th at the moment. They should probably be 7th according to these statistics, but it's just that leaky defence doing it. But Ryan Fraser has been awesome, simply awesome, really dynamic on the ball. Looks like he's bulked up a lot recently. I remember Joe was talking about on a podcast recently about when he did his facts with Rafa Benitez, that as a youngster, Ryan Fraser was very slight and he was easily bullied. And Joe was commentating on a game from him and said he'll never make it, and Joe knows nothing. Ryan Fraser absolutely killing it at the moment. Should be the left winger, in my opinion.
Left winger. It's going to take a lot for me to decide, you know, against Ryan Fraser, because I'm a big fan of his as well. Floor's over to you, Van Strauss.
I think Ryan Fraser would probably deserve a place in the team if there weren't an incredibly obvious candidate who's better than him, which is Felipe Anderson at West Ham, who I would argue is probably the best player outside of the top 6, right? Like, the most talented, certainly. I mean, he doesn't have as many goals and assists as Fraser this season, but I think that's partially a function of how they play. Like, Fraser is getting a lot of cutbacks and creating high volume chances. And he's doing, not high volume, but high quality chances. And he's doing really well, but he's not a guy who's going to create you a chance out of nothing. You know, he can barely dribble, or at least he is barely dribbling at the moment. And I also think he doesn't necessarily give you a lot in other areas. You know, like, I don't have a lot of defense from him. I don't have a lot of progressive passes from him. I think David Brooks is more important there. Whereas Felipe Anderson, I mean, he's actually having his worst season in the last five or six for expected goals and assists per 90, with like 0.34 at the moment, but he's still been involved in 12 goals, which is pretty solid. And I'd expect that to go up next season if it gets anywhere back to the kind of level he's been at previously. There are also, okay, how many players have made more tackles than Felipe Anderson this season in the Prem total?
He did this for Lazio, didn't he, when he was playing left back or left wing back?
He was playing wing back, yeah.
I would say that eight have.
You're actually correct.
Really?
Eight players have made more tackles than Felipe Anderson this season. But think how crazy that is.
That is mental. You know,
and he's basically like having a three-man midfield and a winger at the same time. He's also in the top 10 for dribbles, plus obviously that goal output. And so I think with some team-wide improvements, with a little bit more defence behind him, I'd still like him to defend. You know, that's clearly something he does very well. But I think, here's the thing, if I put Ryan Fraser at Man City or Liverpool, does he play? Like,
no.
Is he going to be useful? Whereas if I put Felipe Anderson at Liverpool, I think he probably would have played in a three-man midfield this season as an attacking midfielder. I think he would have given them just what they wanted from Nabil Fekir when they were hoping to play him as an eight. Mm. So I think, and actually he's a much better defender than Fekir. Bit less creative, maybe, but we don't really know. I mean, I think Felipe Anderson, in a way it's a little bit sad because West Ham paid so much for him that he's not really going to move on. Not unless he has some absolutely outrageous season where he scores like 25. Because they paid so much, they're going to demand, you know, 60, 70 for him. And I'm not sure anyone's going to pay that.
You don't think he's a 25 goal?
No, I don't. But that's exactly my point. But I think, though, that he's really one of the guys who makes football worth watching outside of the top six. Felipe Anderson is a player any one of the top six sides would take. I really do think that. And
probably the best player in the top three in the league, I think, for transitioning the ball just up the pitch. Like, he does not slow down when he runs with the ball.
That's the thing. I think if you put Fraser in Anderson's role at West Ham, I think his output goes down because I think it's partially, at least partially, kind of system-based. I think if you put Anderson in Fraser's role at Bournemouth, I think you get pretty much just as good production out of him. I really do. And so, yeah, I think that's why I'd go for Anderson there. But
how old is he?
He's 25.
Okay, 25.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see if you know, Spurs lose Son this summer, something like that. I'm just trying to think of where a move in the top six could potentially... Maybe if Chelsea...
I don't think they'll pay. I just don't think they'll pay it. I just think it's, if they were going to get him, they'd have got him last summer. And I think the problem is, if you a top six side should not really be buying players from the rest of the Premier League. It's just not a cost effective way to go around buying your players unless it's from a relegated side or a side in real financial difficulty. I love Felipe Anderson, but I think people will go and find cheaper wingers abroad and like gamble on them turning into stars.
That era kind of ended with the new TV rights deal, didn't they, in 2014-15, where like, when Leicester, when they won the Premier League, entered the top 10 richest clubs in the world by virtue of that new TV rights deal and finishing top and securing a Champions League qualification. And it was like, holy shit, like, Leicester, you know, can now afford just as good players as the top boys.
I think it would be expensive, but I'm not totally sure I agree with the argument that there's no value in... I mean, there might not be cost-effective value, but the fact that he's already adapted to the league, that he knows the league so well. I mean, look at Liverpool. They've signed players from the bottom half of the league quite successfully in the last few years. I mean, Robertson, Shaqiri, Wijnaldum. Yeah, I know all
Robertson, exactly. They're all relegated teams.
From the bottom of the league, not from those middling teams. Like,
I just think it's quite depressing. And also the fact that no top, you know, if a player between the clubs in 7th to 12th will never
Manchester
get an opportunity.
Well, they will. I think fullbacks will.
Look at
having
Mahrez
to part with 70 million for Mahrez, though.
Which was a bad idea at the time and remains a bad idea.
And him playing a very limited amount of minutes at the start of the season. I get what you're saying. And even going back to that, you know, Gylfi Sigurdsson costing Everton, £40 million. Jeez. It just becomes, I don't think, maybe not less worthwhile, less viable, and probably less frequent. There's still going to be worthwhile signings in there. But yeah, the Premier League, I think looking outwards makes it much more interesting.
For homegrown players, I think there's obviously always going to be a market, but it just kind of feels like at the end of the season, it feels like Chelsea particularly and possibly Spurs are going to be there for the taking. Maybe Arsenal, like in terms of overtaking them. Like Chelsea probably not going to make the top four despite their metrics being good in the first half of the season. They've been bad recently. And
so going back to my statement
ban.
Earlier, do you think they're the most, in terms of our quest to usurp someone from the top six, are you going Chelsea in sixth?
Chelsea, definitely. Because Chelsea, the problem that Chelsea have is they can't sign in the summer and they need to. Like their squad is in a difficult state as it is. And when we're talking about how good their metrics are, this is almost all a carryover from the first half of the season. If you go and break down their expected goal numbers, like by kind of up until about the end of November or December, and then since, they've really gone off a cliff.
This also means they don't sell, though?
Even if they don't sell, like I don't think they're going to get better than they are now. And what they are now is kind of the fifth to sixth best side in the league. How?
Because they'll get more used to the system. I mean, more time coaching as well. Like people
overestimate
how much
players.
Work you can do during a season. I think that if Sarri got a full pre-season, I'd expect them to be a better side. I'm not saying necessarily positionally, but a better all-round side this year than they are.
But there's no evidence of that based on Sarri's career, though. Like, I mean, at Napoli, like maybe it was a perfect storm, you know, with the talent, but they adapted pretty much immediately and had a really, really big bounce. Mm. And this Chelsea side, they're pretty tactically savvy. Like, they adapted to Conte immediately. You know, they went back into Mourinho when he came back pretty quickly. Like, they're actually really, like, they've had to adapt to more new managers than almost anyone in the league.
Harder to adapt to someone like Sarri or Pep than it is to Conte or Mourinho.
I don't have a clue, but I mean, like, I'd go on like track record. I mean, Mourinho maybe, but I'm not sure it'd be necessarily easier to adapt to Conte than Sarri.
I think if you retain Eden Hazard and you're Chelsea,
that's a big question.
That you're, I think, in better stead to finish. I'd say to not drop out of the top six than Arsenal.
But Arsenal are going to invest in the summer and Chelsea can't.
I thought Arsenal only had £50 million maximum to spend in the summer.
But we know that stuff isn't real. Like, I mean, that supposedly they had 40 last summer, except they spent more than that. Like,
they
stuck
to their guns in January, didn't they? When it looked like made a couple of additions that you could actually, you know, teams were dropping out of favourable, you know, positions for fourth and whatnot.
Yeah, but you also
steal an advantage.
You also look at them and you think, okay, well, there's a decent chance they're going to make top four this season. There really is. And if they do, they can sign. Whereas if Chelsea don't, if they don't make the Champions League, then they don't have that money coming in. They can't bring any new players in. They might well lose Hazard. And if they don't, they'll lose him for free the following summer. These are big problems for a club like Chelsea. I'm not saying Arsenal are nailed on, but I'm saying that from a future standpoint, from the next couple of years, I would rather be Arsenal than Chelsea right now, because I just think that they're going to be able to strengthen in the summer, and if they make Champions League, they'll be able to strengthen substantially, whereas Chelsea need a lot, and they've basically got to hope their young players come in and bang, and maybe they will, but there are big holes in that squad and you're hoping you can fill them with academy kids. And they've also got to wrap up their loan system this summer. They've got to find a way to do that. So I'm a little bit worried about how they're going to adapt to that, especially given they still don't have a director of football and Abramovich seems to give less of a shit with every passing day. So those things do scare me a bit about Chelsea. And right now it feels like every result is making matters worse, but there are now not really the managers out there that they can go and sack Sarri for, and I think everyone's sick of managers getting sacked as well. So you start to get a little bit concerned there. Whereas I think Arsenal, if you dropped a really good left back and a really good centre back in that side, then they could play much less defensively than they have, and I think you'd see a big improvement. And they're still, what, the fourth best team in the league in attack by expected goals. So I think that there's a little bit more of a calculus in favour of Arsenal there.
Interesting.
Spurs as well, of course. We don't know what the economic situation is.
Yeah, I feel like, it's whatever team, barring Manchester United for, you know, off-the-pitch circumstances, miss out on Champions League football, are not in danger of not free-falling, but being caught up significantly by
our side.
By seventh, by eighth, yeah. By outside the top. 6XI.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to say to our viewers at home, our listeners at home, I want you to tell us who you'd pick for left wing on Twitter, Ryan Fraser or Felipe Anderson, because we actually deviated quite a lot there. Let's seamlessly go into our right winger position, and then we're just left with centre forward, and we've put together, you know, quite the side, gentlemen. So, Pato, you can start with right wing, mate.
Well, Duke's kind of gave me Felipe Anderson because I think you were quite keen on him as well originally. So I've taken a massive flyer at right wing just on a guy that I like, that I think you've actually got the correct shout here. So I thought about Brooks, who has big expected assist numbers as well, which kind of goes to my point about it being a system thing with Bournemouth. But I think that is a bit down to style and also has bad dribbling numbers, just like Fraser. And I kind of want someone who can actually fucking move. I thought about Zaha, but pretty bad attacking output this season, which actually is in keeping with his entire career in the Premier League, bar a brief period when he played up front last year.
Oh, man.
And
you think he's overrated?
I've always said that he's overrated.
Bang.
To being yes, the Dukes. Best player outside the top six. He's not. Yeah, he never outrageous. Is. And I didn't deserve death threats for it.
Yeah, there's literally been no point where he has been. But when he was played up front, he was really, really good for a minute. He was played up front in a two by Hodgson at one point, and he was great, but we're not playing him up front.
I think he's a great player. I think he's overrated.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. You can both be great and overrated. Like, I mean, I'm not going to list players here in that position. But Diogo Jota is a shout as well, but I think he's played centre forward more than he's played wing this season. And Richarlison, I think, is going to be a centre forward long term as well, and profiles like a centre forward, so I wouldn't want him playing there either. So I went for Ademola Lookman.
Okay.
Well,
who is?
Is this just because Ralf Rangnick wants him at RB Leipzig?
He's just fucking good. He's just good. You watch him and like he looks. He has everything you want to see in a young player. Like, he's extremely fast. He's very strong, but he's got great attacking instincts. Like, he knows where to be at the right time. His off the ball movement's great. If he had over 1,000 minutes, like normally when I'm looking at stats on who scored, you cut off people who have under 1,000 minutes, and he only has like 500, 600. But if he had 1,000 minutes, he would be top of the Premier League for successful dribbles per game. He's on like 3.7, which is dirty. But of course, small sample size does apply. He's got two assists. He's got 0.44 expected goal contribution per 90, which is really, really strong for a youngster. It's actually basically the same as someone like Cengiz Under at Roma, who apparently is worth 40 to 50 mil. And Pulisic generally has put up under 0.44 per 90 over the last 3 or 4 years, but he's apparently worth that much as well. So I don't know. And plus, when you add in his Bundesliga numbers, you get a much fairer representation of where he is, I think, because then you do have over 1,000 minutes. Now, his goals and assists in that time are absolutely nuts. I think it's 5 goals, 5 assists in like 1,000 minutes, which is absolutely ridiculous. But his expected goals and assist numbers in that time, about 0.6 per 90, which is very, very tasty. And I just think he's got everything I want, like both physically and mentally. He looks like he's going to be a star. Every time I see him come on for Everton, often it is against tired legs. He's coming on late in games. But he is very two-footed, is great at drilling a ball across the area, really seems to understand what defenders expect him to do. And he's just got that kind of enjoyable fearlessness that you see from young players.
Goes for it, doesn't he?
Yeah, I just think, I don't know why he's not playing, really. Because he's better than Bernard, and he's better than Walcott, and he's better than Tosin, and he's better than Calvert-Lewin.
I feel like Calvert-Lewin is getting a nod above him at the moment by virtue of being like a really defensive forward, and the lack of mobility, the lack of a midfield presence in Everton means that, you know, any forward is willing to drop off to apply pressure, to pick up the ball, is an asset to Marco Silva.
I mean, they've got Gay.
Whereas, yeah, Lookman, I know, but I feel like he's the way with it. Ndidi was described in our system, that's how I feel about Idrissa Gueye at Everton.
Like, what, just play, a DM?
Player next to Andre Gomes, whose numbers have been fine this season, and I like him next to Idrissa Gueye, but I think Everton, in order to get the best out of those two, need a third player in there. When you were away, I suggested Bruno Fernandes for Everton, and they could go into a 4-3-3.
That'd be a great get.
At the minute, there just seems to be this vacuum in central midfield for Everton between Gomes, if he's not, you know, putting himself about, which I don't think his natural game lends itself to, and Gylfi Sigurdsson.
I actually would rather play Tom Davis more often than Gomes. I think he's.
Oh, I think Gomes is a much better footballer.
Davis is a much higher ceiling, though. Like, this is what Gomes is, and he's not great. He's fine. He's a league average midfielder. Like, he's not spectacular at any one thing. He's not even very good.
He's above average in some aspects, but probably.
Is he?
But probably. I quite like his ball progression is pretty decent.
It's all right. Like, he looks good on the ball, but like, he doesn't have a lot of progressive passes or runs.
He looks good for the start, mate. He's absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, he's not my type. But I mean, but Tom Davis, I think, has a bit of that as well, and a bit more snap in midfield. But I do think that maybe a three-man midfielder is the way to go for them. But
I feel like no one knows what to do with Tom Davis. Like, at first,
he's so talented
when
though.
He broke onto the scene, really I really liked him because he was
An absolute terrier.
Just a good one-touch footballer as well. Mm. Like, it was quite rare that to see a young English midfielder who wanted to do everything first time, who had the awareness to execute things first time. Remember, just little, you know, little passes around the corner. I just think, oh, this guy's got it. Like, technically speaking, it was, you know, similar vibes to when I first watched Harry Winks play, and it was like, oh, these one-touch passes don't feel very English, or this movement, this little turn of the head doesn't feel very, very English. But yeah, his progression has just plateaued in the last two seasons.
I think one of the issues with Everton, though, is they've got a fucking huge squad, and they've got a lot of old players. They've got a lot of old players who are fucking dross.
You can make a fair bit of money off people like Schneiderlin, Tosin. These can all be shifted off.
But then people came in relatively recently, like Walcott, and it's just like, I like Theo Walcott, but he's not very good anymore, and he's pretty slow now. And like, I just think maybe what will happen at some point is some of those guys will age out. Richarlison will go to centre forward. Lookman will get those wing minutes. But I mean, there's talent there, but there's just like, it's just sorting through garbage to get there. And that's my issue at Everton, because like, I actually like a lot of the rudiments of their squad. I really like Yerry Mina. I like a lot of their players, but they're just, I don't know. It's a haphazardly built squad.
Yeah. Digne, Coleman, Key. I mean, Keane's had a mixed year.
Digne
as well,
has had a great season, hasn't he?
No, no, no. I thought
he's been fantastic creatively.
£18 million as well.
I mean, that's quite pricey. He's
proven a bloody steal at the moment. I think in terms of expected goals and assists, I think only he's maybe eighth in the Premier League at the moment, or possibly higher.
I think Kolasin actually above him.
But I can't remember that.
My
stat.
Boy.
I can't remember that stat if he was a midfielder. No, anyway, let's move on from that, because it's just escaped into the grey matter of my brain, which is still a little bit. Yeah, I'm flagging a little bit
really?
Still. Yeah, I've got to admit. Not had the best couple nights sleep. But that's neither here nor there. So right wing, Kurucalii.
Yeah, so I really wanted to include a Watford player in my suggestions. I know you shouldn't go into anything with a sort of preconception, but I just think they've gone slightly under the radar, and I also massively got this season wrong for them. So a bit of background on them. They've actually only played 5 Premier League seasons this century, and two of those, 99 to 2000 and 2006 to 2007, ended in relegation. Since they gained promotion to the top flight in 2014-15, along with Bournemouth, they finished 13th, 17th and 14th whilst going through Kike Sanchez-Flores, in my opinion, the best-looking manager in football, Walter Mazzarri, and Marco Silva, and now Javi Grazia. Despite receiving £35 million straight up, plus add-ons, which are believed to be about £15 million for the Richarlison sale, they only invested £27 million back into the squad last summer, £11.7 million which went on De La Feo, and £2.5 million on Ben Foster, which were the sort of major signings. And I looked at that last summer, and I just thought, Watford are going to struggle this year. But at the time of writing, they are at 8th and just a point off Wolves, although they're only 3 points above 11th place Everton. So that sort of area just outside the top six until you get down to sort of 14th is really, really tight. They've had a mixed year in terms of their results. Well, just a poor year in terms of their results against top six opposition. So they beat Spurs 2-1 at home in early September, but that was the only time they've taken points off top six opposition in 9 attempts this season. But the record against the rest of the league is pretty good. It's pretty incredible, really. They played 21, won 11, drawn 7, and lost just 3 of their games against the other 14 teams. So they're still very much in the hunt to be the best of the rest. And crucial to their form has been that of 25-year-old winger Gerard Deulofeu, who obviously came in this summer on a permanent deal. He's actually played the majority of his football this year as a second striker off Dini or Gray, but I mean, he is a right winger by trade. And you know, are we that surprised by his form? I mean, I certainly am by his consistency, but remember, this is a player who's played 23 games for Barcelona. He's played 28 in one season for Sevilla. He's played 18 for AC Milan. This is actually the first time he has made over 20 league appearances in a season since 15-16. And his goal return of 7 is the best in a single season since he was playing for Barcelona B. And he's also provided 5 assists. So 7 goals, 5 assists. Only Troy Dine, with 8 goals, scored more. And Decore and Holobas, with 6, have been the only players to provide more assists. So his 18-19 stats look like this. He's taking 2.2 shots per 90, 1.8 dribbles, and 1.3 key passes, which doesn't sound that exceptional, but he's being deadly effective with his output. 0.6 expected goals and assists. His 0.37 expected goals is the same as Leroy Sané and David Silva, and his 0.25 expected assists is more than Christian Eriksen's 0.24. He's had two fairly large injuries at Watford, and despite this, so he's been sort of in and out of the side, but he seems like he's really coming into his own now. He's such a fun player to watch. I think he picks up really good positions. He's always willing to go beyond the last man. He's fully committed.
Yeah, I much prefer him like hovering around centrally now, as the second striker this season.
Definitely
sort of
getting him more involved.
Line,
yeah, I think he's got so much to offer around the box. And I've just been really impressed with his finishing as well this year. I think it's gone up another level as well. So he's had an interesting career. I mean, he's gone around the block. But yeah, I think he's been great, really.
Yeah, if you can get another two or three consistent years out of him, then he could be the difference between Watford, you know, securing well, competing with Wolves for seventh, because they are heavily reliant on his reliant on his creativity, aren't they? And that Ingrassia's sort of unorthodox, very narrow 4-2-2-2 system. I think Decore deserves a bit of a shout out in that system as well. He's probably, I mean, he's not technically as good as Pereira, and Kapuwe is probably more aesthetically pleasing to watch, but I think he's contributing to 0.4 expected goals and assists combined this season. Yeah. Decore, what is it? Six assists, three goals, maybe?
Yeah, I think it might well be.
And he's contributes to 53 passes with an 83% pass accuracy per 90 as well. So Decore, at the base of that midfielder, I mean, he's not going to get in above Neves, and he's not going to get in above Bissouma or Ndidi or Tielemans. But Decore for me, yeah, has been worthy of a shout. Yeah.
I really looked at putting Roberto Pereira in as well, but
his numbers have dropped off massively this season.
I was trying to compare him with Deulofeu, and there really was no comparison. Deulofeu's got far more impressive numbers, and Roberto Pereira had a great start, but just so inconsistent, which has been the story of his career, really. Great player, but not consistent.
But Deulofeu's never had an issue with output. Like, his issue's always been like whether he gets played, because he pisses everyone off. Like,
he is an interesting character.
Even when he comes off now, like, even at 70, 80 minutes, he's throwing his little gloves away.
He had a great season or half season at Everton, and then like pissed everyone off. Like, I think he got 5 assists for Lukaku in half a season.
It's the time now to grow up, really.
And then got binned.
He's 25.
Yeah.
Well, because he could still have a really good career, but otherwise he's going to turn into a Hatem Ben Arfa, where it's just like every now and then people are like, Hatem Ben Arfa's having an amazing season, and that's news, because most seasons he has a shit.
Yeah.
Like, whereas you look at Deulofeu and you're like, he could be one of those guys who, like, yes, he's in the mid-table, but you know, you always think of as like a quality player and is well remembered.
Yeah,
like,
you're hoping that he goes more Paille than Ben Arfa, aren't you? Becomes this, like, Paille always had the talent, but then had not a renaissance when he was like 26, 27, but found that consistency, found that maturity a little bit maybe later on. And I do think, yeah, he could be a really good second striker playing down the middle. I think, yeah, let's go with Deulofeu.
Yeah, I think that's the right choice.
Keep your eyes on Lookman. Let's go centre forward then to complete our XI. Patrick, the floor is yours again.
I think there are loads of great options here, actually. I think Vardy's had a good season. I think Mitrovic, actually. There's a part of me that regrets not picking Mitrovic here, because he's played on one of the worst sides in the league, and yet has put up great numbers all season long. Really good big man, great feet.
Shots, like, haven't gone below three, have they?
He's a real bit. Yeah. His shots are exceptionally good, actually. Good quality and good numbers. But I've gone for, another little test. Do you know which player outside the top six has the best expected goals and expected assists per 90 this season? Right. Now, this has gone round a little bit, so people might have heard about it. But
Combined expected goals and expected assists outside the top
90.
Six.
Outside the top six.
And so it's a centre forward. I'm guessing it applies to this situation.
Maybe.
Maybe. Oh.
I mean, if you want to pick like a fullback, fill your boots.
Is it Glenn Murray?
It's not Glenn Murray.
Okay.
I'm assuming it's not Mitrovic.
Raul Jimenez.
No.
Go on then.
You got no other shouts. Oh,
okay, do we want to keep going?
No, it's not Vardy either. It's Ashley Barnes.
Then, was 100% not
0.75, and then Vardy is behind him on 0.74, and also 0.74 is Callum Wilson. And
is
Callum,
he actually Austrian? I was thinking about this the other day.
Come on,
is that on like through a gram? He looks so British, and he's called Ashley Barnes.
He is British, but like, yeah, you can qualify.
But I just, I, does
you sound
know
so English, but look at you, you're a Scot.
Well, I'm half and half.
Yeah, but you're still, you sound English.
Not right, I'd be lying if I said I had a fucking
stoop. But I was wondering whether anyone had any info on how he qualifies for Austria. I wasn't trying to start
mate, you've got every other
residency rule debate.
You've got every other player's story written down, mate. Give me Ashley Barnes' life story right now, Doogie.
Atkins, could you look that up behind the scenes?
No, he won't. He won't do it as well as you, Doogs. Okay. Come on.
Okay, give me five.
Oh, supplying the colour. Okay, until Doogie can deliver Ashley Barnes, as you know, until he can paint his family tree, then let's go back to Pato's striking option, which is Callum Wilson.
Yeah, Wilson, 0.74 expected goals and assists per 90, which is above Hazard, Pogba, Rashford and Lacazette. So that there's a picture.
Drop
that gives
Mike
you a picture.
Leave.
He scored 11 and assisted 6 this season. So Vardy and Jimenez both have 12, but Vardy's taken 3 penalties. Jimenez has taken 2. Wilson only has 1. So Wilson and Jimenez both on 10 non-penalty goals. And so, I don't know. Jimenez is also... I'm kind of cutting off Doogie's balls here because I think he's going to talk about Jimenez. But Jimenez has been involved in 1 goal more than Wilson, but he's played 500 minutes more than him. He's also got better fitness than him, I'll give you that. And his shot numbers are better as well. Lots more shots from inside the box. Whereas Wilson doesn't shoot a whole lot, but has incredible shot quality. 2.3 shots a game this season, though that's dropped off the beginning of the year. It was like over 4. But only 2 of his 48 shots have come from outside the box. So he is getting super high quality chances. Obviously, thanks to an incredible attacking cast around him. I mean, like Fraser, King, even Moussa, Brooks... well, obviously he's been injured, but Lewis Cook when he could play.
And Wilson chips in on occasion.
Yeah, I mean, that is a hell of an attacking core for a team the size of Bournemouth. Like, it's really quite impressive. If they upgrade their fullback areas, then I think they'll be, you know, something to reckon with. And obviously very quick as well. And half his goals this season have actually come with his left foot or with his head. So he's a bit of an all-round threat. I mean, if it weren't for his injury problems, I do think that Wilson, we'd have seen him move possibly last summer, certainly this summer. I think you'd have seen a club like a Chelsea or something go for him if they could. But those injuries...
They were looking at him in January, apparently.
Yeah, but you could. But then they decided not to. And I think we all just thought, that's a knee thing.
Yeah.
That's got to be a knee thing.
For £50 million, it's a knee thing.
I'm not paying £50 million for one knee.
Do you have a fitness issue? You know, if you're thinking about fitness issues, do you really sign Higuain and as the alternative?
If they think of him as a short-term thing, I don't know. I think that's part of the problem of not having a director of football, right? I think Sarri was like, give me someone I know. Because the fact that they binned Batshuayi and Abraham,
and no one was there otherwise to say, this isn't in tandem with what we're trying to achieve here. It was just like, everyone's on the yacht. Everyone's on a Roman's yacht in the fucking
there's no project
Persian
anymore.
Gulf.
There's no project anymore. But I also just feel like, you know, like Morata got a lot of shit at the beginning of the season for like some bad performances here and there. Didn't get a lot of credit for his good ones. But no one seems to have acknowledged the fact that after he left, Chelsea's attack got worse. Massively, massively worse. It's massively worse with Higuain up front. It was certainly worse with Eden Hazard as a number 9. So, I mean, I don't know. I just think he did make the rest of the team work in attack, at least. And now they're in this position where, what, they're going to have to extend that loan until the end of the next season or play Tammy Abraham there or something. I don't know. Chelsea are a disaster. But I think... Callum Wilson, I mean, the one thing you might want to say about him is that he doesn't have a lot of tackle and interception numbers, but he's actually 7th among forwards for fouls per game. And obviously, this is something we're seeing more and more in the league. I mean, the best defensive...
As in defensive fouls?
Well...
He's being fouled?
Yeah,
he's
no, he's committing fouls. Right. I mean, the best players in the league, like the best defenders from the front in the league, Jimenez is actually pretty good.
Firmino, I guess? Yeah.
Lacazette is above Firmino. Yeah. Lacazette's probably the best in the league at the moment, like more tackles and interceptions and fouls. Like, so doing a lot of pressing. Firmino's actually dropped off a bit from last season. I think they're more conservative this season than they were.
A little look at Arsenal's press, and it's something like your press it's just as effective as Wenger's the season before it, as in the opposition is completing 9 passes before you trigger a defensive
action.
Yeah. Yes. But it's 24% more aggressive. Yeah. Within 2 seconds of the opposition getting the ball. So your press is just as ineffective, but you haven't got this, you know, soft centre in certain areas anymore. General picture being painted? It's confusing.
I think that depends what you define as kind of efficacy. Like, so I think I would say it's effective now in that when we press, we're able to force teams back. Whereas when Wenger pressed, like, we'd break up play at the same rate, but it was... much easier for a team to then just get through us. Now we're better at containing some teams with our pressing. Even if we don't break possession up as much, we force them to go back to the keeper, or we force them to hit the ball long or whatever, and then that goes out. That doesn't go down as a defensive action, but it is a kind of mistake that you force through defensive pressure. So, I mean, I think that we've definitely improved in that regard.
So what counts as an aggressive action again? So being a defensive 24% more aggressive, just to defend...
Well, no, these will be pressures. These are pressures. Right. Like, so this is something that StatsBomb have started recording themselves because it's not publicly available data. But I think that we're starting to see this more. And the fact that Wilson is doing this work for the team, I think, really, really helps slow things down a bit before they hit that midfield zone. So I quite like to see some fouls from forwards, because also they don't tend to get punished.
Mm.
You know, like if you're like Lacazette,
80 yards from goal,
Lacazette and Firmino hack people down all the time. Morata last season committed more fouls than I think he was Chelsea's. He committed more fouls for Chelsea than any other player. I think he was in the top 10 in the league for fouls, and I think he had like three
Stepping
yellow cards
Diego
or something.
Shoes nicely.
Yeah, though Diego didn't do it defensively. He did it just because he was a cock. So I mean, I don't know. I think actually we're spoiled for choice here. I think there are loads of players who'd be good in this role.
Fair.
Okay, well, I can tell you, Ashley Barnes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just about to say I can tell you one player that won't be making. It's Ashley Barnes. But if you're a bit weird like me and you spend a few hours a day thinking about Ashley Barnes' nationality, I can give you the details. So he's born in Bath to English parents, but he would qualify to represent Austria because he's got a paternal grandmother who was from Klagenfurt, and he can acquire Austrian citizenship. He was actually spotted by Austrian scouts playing for Plymouth Argyle, and they said, get involved, Barnsley. And he made an appearance for the Austrian under 20 side, but still hasn't been called up to the senior team. Which is, kind of surprising. And Arnautovic and Ashley Barnes duo up front, not going to do it for the Austrians. Anyway,
it'd be cool if he played for them.
It would be. It would be.
Arvey's not a very good skier. None of the Burnley lads have ever been skiing up there. Come on.
Right, but my real suggestion, who Pat briefly mentioned before, is Raul Jimenez, who obviously Mexican, began his career in Mexico with Club America, and scored 13 goals in 102 games for them in all competitions, which prompted Atletico Madrid to part with 11 million euros to sign him in August 2014, a few months after securing the La Liga title, I should say. He struggled for game time, though. He started just 4 La Liga games, 17 appearances off the bench, as Simeone preferred a front two of Griezmann, who scored 22 league goals, and Mandzukic, 12 league goals, with backup from Fernando Torres. So probably fair enough that he didn't get much of a look at him there. But his stats weren't awful there in his year in Madrid. 2.7 shots, 1.3 key passes. But Simeone was willing to let him go. At this stage, West Ham were actually willing to take him on loan. Pretty interested. But he failed to make his flight for the medical, with rumours that he fell asleep. Although some reports claim that Jorge Mendes, his agent, persuaded him to join Benfica instead. He instantly made a name for himself there. 31 goals in 120 games for Benfica. Not incredible, but did have a nice run in the Champions League as well. They reached the quarterfinals in 2015-16, eventually losing to Bayern Munich. He got 3 goals and 2 assists in that year's competition. He was more of a useful squad player than a complete star. He only started 6 Liga NOS games last season with Jonas, who scored 34 goals last year up front at about 40. In June 2018, he renewed his contract with Benfica, which is quite crucial, until 2021, before being loaned out on a €3 million season-long loan to Wolves with a buyout clause of €38 million. He scored on his competitive debut versus Everton in a 2-2 draw, has since scored 11 more Premier League goals, so 12 in the league for the season. His opener versus Chelsea a few weeks back tied him with Stephen Fletcher for most goals for Wolves in a single Premier League season, which is a completely pointless stat. I don't know why I've included that. He's also got 3 goals in cup competitions, so he's on 15 goals in 35 games in all competitions. His 18-19 stats look like this. He takes 3.2 shots, with 2.3 of them from inside the area, 1.1 dribbles and 1.3 key passes per 90. His expected goals and assists is 0.6, which is actually nice. Bang on his actual goals and assists. And his XG per 90 of 0.42 isn't that far off Rashford's 0.47 or Mane's 0.46. Although Mane is playing a lot of his season on the left, and Rashford until a couple of months ago now, was playing on the left as well. I like him a lot. He's 27. I can't really see another top club going for him, just with that buyout clause in his contract. But I would strongly recommend that Wolves activate it for €38 million. I think
really
for a player of that quality, I think it's a snip.
That brings the total to over 40 mil. Really?
Yeah, 41 for two seasons.
I think that's a lot, man.
Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I
think it's ready made. I think he's fitted into Nuno Espirito Santo's system like seamlessly. I think his build up play is great. He's running in between, running behind. I think he's like a pretty much a complete forward. He's just a bit old.
I think he's good. Yeah, but the thing is about Wolves, I kind of trust them at this point to find talent, like undervalued talent cheaply, especially
in
Portugal.
Going for Tammy Abraham, weren't they?
Well, yeah, and I think Tammy Abraham would actually be like a better bet overall because they've still got Jota as well, who's had a really good season. And I think
they play two up front.
Yeah, but they've mostly used Jota coming on like late in games. Mm. I think like that's when he's got most of his goals anyway.
What was the sticking point with Tammy Abraham? Because weren't they prepared to
He didn't want to go. He said no.
£80,000 a week.
Or he didn't want to go on loan again. He was just like, sell me or keep me. I don't give a fuck. Like,
okay. I saw on FD's Instagram this morning that he come out and saying he wants to play for Chelsea.
Well, I'm sure he does, and I hope he gets to play. Yeah, I'm sure he's got all the talent in the world.
There's a few loanees that have seen that transfer ban and thought, okay, this is a strike while the iron is hot.
40 mil's a lot.
How do we think that these forwards, so Callum Wilson and Raul Jimenez, how do we think they would work with Ryan Fraser or Felipe Anderson to be decided by the fans, Maddison and Delafeu? Because instinctively, I would say that we need a little bit more beef up front, and Raul Jimenez's link-up play has been very, very good this season. Whereas Callum Wilson, when I've seen him at his best, he's kind of been
on the shoulder of the last defender running
with Josh King. Yeah. I think him and Josh King as the two have been awesome. And when I've watched sort of breakdowns of Bournemouth at their best, they've never been further than 10 yards apart from one another, with the sort of wide men, you know, being, you know,
sure,
diligent down the wings.
For me, this is the closest call in terms of, I think both would be good options. Like, often, like, Felipe Anderson, I think, was the clear shout, like, Maddison too. But I think this is actually, you know, this is a potential decision.
Yeah, you've got a couple of years, you know, Raul Jimenez has got a couple of years on him to justify the price tag, but you've got, you know, Callum Wilson's lack of tendons
Callum
in one
Wilson,
knee.
To be fair, you say 40 million. Callum Wilson would cost 40 million this summer.
Yeah, and I wouldn't pay that for him with his knees. If not for his knees, I'd happily pay that. Like, I'd say the issue here is that, like, Callum Wilson, you could argue that some of his goal output is because of, like, a really good counter-attacking side. Whereas my issue with Raul Jimenez is I'd say this is as good as he gets. Like, he's got 12 goals this season. He might end up with 15, 16. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah.
Like, that's right at the upper end of what he's shown he's capable of through his career.
And 100%,
And at 27, he's not going to get better. Whereas I would say, if Wilson stays fit, which is a massive if, you know, like that's a Troy Deeney sized if. Like, I think that you maybe get more production out of him, but it's, I don't know, it's just a gamble. I mean, really, if Vardy was younger or Wilson was fitter, I think those would be the obvious choices. But because they're not, I think that Jimenez is a reliable. I mean, actually, maybe we should have just gone for Mitrovic. He does kind of, he combines that physical
younger
size.
As well.
He's younger, great shot numbers, like doing it on a fucking dreadful team.
I can see Mitrovic having more than one 20 goal season as well.
Yeah,
whereas
exactly.
With Raul Jimenez and
Callum
Wilson, I don't really see that happening.
This is Jimenez's best year for ages. I think since he left Mexico, he got one goal in his season at Atleti. I know he's fourth choice, and then played back up to Jonas at Benfica. So, it is a slight risk.
And he's the youngest. For Mitrovic's shot numbers to still be around four as well, despite being absolutely starved of like good service. I mean, they were creating opportunities at the start of the season,
so
weren't they? But Schürrle was taking a hell of a lot of shots from left, right and centre. So that kind of skewed numbers a little bit. I'd be lying if I said I'd revisited them in any great detail. But I think just based on profile, I'm ready to stick my, you know, colours, is it? To a Raul Jimenez-shaped mast.
Lovely, a golden mast.
So that makes our team. So we've got Patricio in goal, Chilwell at left-back, Ake and Tarkowski at centre-back, Wan-Bissaka at right-back, Neves and Bissouma as part of a midfield pivot. And you've got Ryan Fraser or Felipe Anderson. I think this general consensus in here is Felipe Anderson. But again, we want you to get involved on the left-hand side with Maddison and Delafeu making up that midfield attacking triumvirate. And Raul Jimenez galvanizing that maybe, you know, slightly lightweight midfield with his big beefy presence up front. Although, you know, if someone had brought Mitrovic to the table, could have been Mitrovic quite easily. So any last minute additions to the side, gentlemen, or any points you want to flag?
No, I'm happy. I like that side. No Ndidi, but no worries.
That's our team that is breaking the top six. Let us know what you think, who you'd swap out on Twitter, Instagram, and, you know, alas, let's move on to Facts of Rafa Benitez.
It's a fact. Facts. Facts.
So this week's hastily thrown together Facts of Rafa Benitez is famous encounters, gentlemen. Ooh. And Patrick has a dentist appointment, so we're going to make this nice and quick. I'm going to read out three names. You can ask me to elaborate on the stories. You can, you know, you ask me to do whatever, okay? One. So I have met, we're looking for one truth here. Gary Lineker. Mm. Woody from This Is England. And three, Pixie Lott.
Let's start with Gary.
So I've had a personal encounter with this person.
Where does he meet Gaz?
And I've only got three names written down in paper, so let's see how this goes. I could come absolutely undone at the seams here. Gary Lineker, so it was in a Frankie's and Benny's in Leicester. I was just with my sister and I was desperate to get his autograph. You know, massive fan of Match of the Day when I was, what, 11, 12 years old. Wanted him to serve my napkin, but my, you know, my sister being the good, you know, well-to-do girl that she is. Yeah, goody two-shoes, said I shouldn't disturb him whilst he was with his family. And I got rather, you know, upset with her and walked out.
Wow.
So it's a sort of false meeting. You saw it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I also met Gary Lineker with you one time through work. So
we did. But this, you know, goes back to this specific occasion. When it felt special.
Well, it always comes back to a specific occasion. That's how meeting someone works.
Right, no.
Snake.
Number two, Woody from This Is England.
Which one's that?
So he is the short hair, not bald. That's Combo. He's the sort of the one that Stephen Graham.
Yeah. I like Stephen.
That's his character. Yes, very good. Very good actor. Underrated. The English Joe Pesci, Martin Scorsese called him. Woody. I met Woody in Nottingham in a vintage clothes shop. And he, I asked if I could have a photo with him and he said, yes, I'm only going to give you a photo if I can cradle you like a baby.
How big were you at the time?
Yeah, a full grown man. Right. I mean, all 5 foot, you know, 10, 9 of me.
Eight and a half.
All 5 foot, 9 of me. He cradled me and we got a photo and it's visible on my, you know, personal accounts that are hidden away from the world.
Okay. Okay. Okay, interesting.
So number three, Pixie Lott. This was in Kensington.
Okay.
And I was with my girlfriend at the time. We were going to watch The Lion King. One of the first times we'd been down to London to do something, you know, culturally enlightening together.
Okay.
Going to the theatre. And
epic production, by the way.
Yeah, so, so good. I love their performance on the aeroplane as well. You know, they just burst out into song. They're all
sure.
No flying first class, no dig. Oh, I'll show you after, mate.
I thought you said Lion King.
Yeah, never mind. We're running a limited amount of time.
Right.
And I walked past Pixie Lott and she was with her boyfriend and I was a big fan of Pixie Lott at the time, you know, both as the artist and had a little bit of a crush.
As a woman.
Had a little bit of a crush on her as a woman, yes.
Essex icon.
And I walked past Pixie Lott and her boyfriend and I actually only noticed her boyfriend's hair and I said to my girlfriend, his lid looks incredibly good. And she went, that was Pixie Lott. And I went, oh, for fuck's sake. She was like, you've just missed your current crush. And of course, she's come into stories before where we got someone to interview her in a kippers and slippers top. I walked past Pixie Lott and only noticed her boyfriend's rather slick pomade ridden.
So why were you in Kensington?
So we were just going around. So the theatre was later that night. We were just going around London.
Sure.
I was about to say
the theatre for The Lion King is not in Kensington.
Our hotel was
it's on the Strand.
Yeah, our hotel was horrific that night as well. It had a massive, so it was a really nice hotel, but it had the air conditioning unit was broken, and it was like I was fucking mad, you know. But like I was in the Normandy beach landings all night, and me and Lauren ended up getting moved into another bedroom that had two separate single beds, so it didn't finish very romantically.
Really?
But I think so, that's the truth. Ask away.
Because
no, there's one lie. right?
No, it's what
we're looking for. One truth.
We're looking for one truth.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay.
I think that's the truth. Because really? That added aircon and Normandy beaches, it sounded all like he'd come up with it beforehand, like it was true.
I'll go for this is England. This is England really? Seems like the truth to me.
What was Hamill doing in a vintage clothes shop in Nottingham?
When you're at uni, you do shit like that, you know? Yeah. Like, you need to dress up for things and, like, you know.
He picked you up like a baby.
Is more what he was doing in there. I think that's
sure
a weird
Gary
place
Lineker's
for Stephen Graham to be.
It's just a bit of a weak story, I'm afraid, Gary Lineker.
Quite pleased with how they came out, really, because I've just thought that, you know, most of them on the spot. So
yeah. Except for one of them.
Well, except for one of them.
And I would say picks it up. But are you pretty sure it's the...
I'm not pretty sure, but I mean, like, I'm going to be honest, Doogie. It's not going to change my life, either way.
Can you imagine? I can imagine...
Man needs to get to the dentist.
Yeah. I can imagine him looking at Pixie Lott's boyfriend's hair rather than Pixie Lott. He's hair obsessed.
Yeah, I can see that happening. But also...
Should we do a rock, paper, scissors? See which one we go for and then you can get out of here and get to that dentist?
Okay.
Okay.
One, two, three.
All right.
Where's your hand? One, two, three.
You go on three.
Okay.
I'm going to go one, two, three, and then another one.
I do one, two, three.
Dude.
Reveal.
Jesus. Okay, let's just you just choose.
Just a reminder to vote for choose, best podcast on the FBA's.
I'm gonna let you choose, Dave.
Okay, I'm pretty sure it's Pixie Lott.
I think it's Stephen Graham.
Let's lock in Pixie Lott.
So one, it was not Gary Lineker. I did see him at Frankie's and Benny's, but didn't even think to ask for his autograph. He was enjoying a meal with his family. Two, this happened, but with my friend Sean Rowley. Shout out.
Well done,
so three, it was Pixie Lott. There we go.
Well done, dude.
We've got to wrap this shit up now. I've got to leave. So thank you very much. Cheers for listening. And sorry for, you know, my head still being in a different time zone. But these boys did very well. Bye.
Good luck.
Bye.